them my way via email to news@wslr.org. Coming up right now, The Ruthless Truth with Ruth Beltran and friends. Stay tuned.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 Bradenton. The views, comments, and opinions that come from our interviews, shows, air personalities, and from our calling guests are uncensored, and those views and opinions can be widespread and extremely diverse. These opinions or views do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WSLR, Fogartyville, our staff, or volunteers. Get up, stand up.
Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of The Ruthless Truth. My name is Jack Wallace and I will be the host for today's show. I just want to say thank you for listening to WSLR on 96.5 and please becoming a member of WSLR if you like the programming that you hear today. So we can just get straight into it, into some true updates on some of the political developments that have been going on here locally and around the world. So we return again to the prison camp that's being built in the Everglades, right? The so-called Alligator Alcatraz. A group of Florida lawmakers, headed up by Orlando area Rep. Anna Escamani, were denied their statutory authority to access prisons and detention facilities when they recently visited the prison camp. I think the next logical question, right? What is the reason that they gave for denying them? First, it was just sort of a flat-out denial by state officials, right? Then they moved on, they changed their story a little bit, saying that it was for, quote, safety concerns. The lawmakers, they asked for specifics, and none were provided. Eventually, when sort of debating this refusal, the lawmakers, right, when they were on the phone with the Florida Department of Emergency Management outside the prison, they were hung up on. If this detention center is unsafe for those lawmakers, then how is it safe for those being detained? Keep an eye on this story, of course, and we'll be giving more updates here on The Ruthless Truth about this developing story, I'm sure, for the next foreseeable future. Netanyahu visited Trump again in the past few days, and get this, Netanyahu nominated Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. This guy literally just bombed another country a few weeks ago. It reminds me of when Obama was awarded the prize after literally drone striking hospitals and weddings in places across the global south. But back to Trump, right? And his meeting with Netanyahu. He told reporters, Netanyahu did, that Israel is still working with the U.S. to find countries willing to help displace the Palestinians from Gaza. Basically, take them as refugees. If you ever needed any more evidence of direct U.S. involvement in the genocide of the Palestinian people, here you have it. In response to this meeting, hundreds rallied outside the White House, protesting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's meeting with Trump. Protesters were demanding Netanyahu be held accountable for war crimes and the genocide in Gaza, and we here on the Ruthless Truth team certainly support them. Moving on to the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, I'm sure people have heard lots about this at this point. It passed the House last week, and President Trump signed it into law, of course, on July 4th. This is not a win for the working class. No matter how many tiny carrots they decide to wave in our faces, you know, I'm thinking of like the no tax on tips coming to mind. The bill eliminates health care and food assistance for millions of Americans, while adding $150 billion in military spending and tripling the funding for mass imprisonment and deportation of immigrants. Under this legislation, ICE will become the highest funded federal law enforcement agency in U.S. history. In U.S. history, right? This is a significant escalation in the war on immigrants. Not only this, but the bill delivers over $1 trillion in tax cuts for the ultra-wealthy over the next decade. And it is estimated that because of this bill, that over 12 million Americans are expected to lose their health care. This includes about 2 million Floridians. It is not a win for the working class, like I said. No matter what they try to spin it as. And to go in depth, actually, on the Big Beautiful Bill, I'd like to play a clip for you from a recent Freedom Side live show where hosts Rania Kallik and Eugene Puryear are joined by a couple different special guests. Amy Hanauer, the executive director of the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, joins the show to discuss the anti-worker measures of Trump's reconciliation bill, the BBB, that just passed in the Senate and the House, and of course that he signed through. Republicans rammed through a bill that slashed food aid, health care, and basic support for the country's poorest and working class Americans in order to hand $114 billion in tax breaks to the richest 1% in a single year. She will discuss the implications of what is set to be the largest wealth transfer in U.S. history. Later on in the show, the hosts have Jesse Franzblau on, who is the Associate Director of Policy with the National Immigrant Justice Center, to discuss the dramatic expansion of the U.S. deportation regime as ICE raids surge and the government passes the BBB, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, channeling billions more into detention centers, deportations, and a massive ICE hiring spree. So, here we go. We're going to hear from Rania Kallik and Eugene Puryear from the Freedom Side Live. Let's take a listen.
Well, great to have you, and thanks also to the whole ITEP team for putting out fantastic analysis on this. And I, having read it, have a little bit of a sense of what's happening. But for our viewers who maybe haven't, you know, the White House is saying that this is a bill that will have tax cuts that mainly benefit working and middle class Americans. And so I'd just like to ask you, are they telling the truth?
That is an absolute lie. This bill actually delivers over the next decade $1 trillion to the top 1% of taxpayers in America. $1 trillion. And those are brand new numbers based on this bill. 70% of the benefits go to the top 20%, the wealthiest 20% of earners. This is not equitable. It takes money from programs that help low and middle income people and shifts it to the wealthy.
It's so insane. It's so insane that that's a massive transfer of wealth. And on top of that, this bill slashes food aid, health care, all kinds of social supports at a time when millions across the U.S. are already struggling. So I'm curious if you can talk about the specific programs that are going to take a hit here and what the real life consequences of those cuts might look like.
Yeah, thanks so much for asking about that. I mean, this really is a sort of shift in our history. It is a historic change in the way we want to approach our people. So these are the biggest cuts to food aid in history in the United States, and really kind of reneging on a long-term promise, like a commitment that the federal government made, that while food aid has always been very, 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 very modest, that we would make sure that the very hungriest children and people with disabilities and elderly people in our country would at least get a minimal amount of food. But this bill reneges on that promise. It's also the biggest cuts in history to health care coverage, and that will affect both lower income families who are on Medicaid, but it will also affect families who have been getting Affordable Care Act subsidies.
You know, Amy, one of the things that ITEP also does fairly frequently that I think is notable is you put out a report on corporations that basically pay no taxes because they're able to sort of, you know, do all these different pieces. So we know that the tax cuts for the wealthiest people and corporations are so big, but we know there's also big cuts to the IRS as well. So, I mean, is it possible that the tax cuts could even be bigger than we expect for the wealthy because it will be easier for them to exploit loopholes?
Well, there's always that possibility. You know, there are always ways that these things play out a little bit differently than what we expect. I think at the scale that we're talking about, though, the story is just really, really clear. And what you're saying about the IRS is valid. Like, the IRS has been really, you know, just stripped of its power to enforce the tax code on the wealthiest people and corporations. And what that means is that they then tend to turn their energy to low-income families who collect the earned income tax credit, leaving all of this money on the table from these wealthy tax cheats. So it's really a kind of crazy way of doing things.
You know, Amy, I think every few years, especially when there's Republicans in charge, but, you know, it can even happen when there's Democrats in charge sometimes, you'll have these bills that end up giving more tax cuts to the wealthy, to the point where some people might hear that and think, oh, yeah, this is just like another version of what we see when these people are in charge, is more tax cuts for the wealthy. So I'm just curious if you can talk a bit about how this bill is different from perhaps past bills where we've seen these massive tax cuts for the rich. Because, yes, this sort of, you know, is an evolution of that, but this kind of goes to more extreme degrees.
That's right. I mean, this is actually the biggest upward redistribution of wealth in our nation's history, because it so aggressively cuts programs that serve low and middle income families, primarily low income families, really. And it so aggressively shifts resources to the wealthiest people and corporations. And that's, so that's kind of historic. And I'll just say the three major things that this bill really, really weakens is it weakens the progressive income tax. That's a very progressive tax because the more you earn, the more you pay. It weakens the corporate income tax. And we can get into that a little bit more in follow-up questions if you want. But that is a very progressive tax that falls heavily on the wealthiest people and also happens to fall on foreign investors. So they'll both be getting a break in this. And it weakens the estate tax, which is the stopgap we have against intergenerational transfer of wealth from dynastic wealthy families to their heirs. Those families can now hand down $30 million before anyone pays a penny of estate tax. So this is just going to perpetuate a really extreme income divides, racial wealth divides in this country.
Wow, that's estate tax. That's quite something. I do want to talk more about the corporate income tax, because obviously I think corporations have had, you know, a pretty good run of years. And I think all of us who've been suffering from inflation have certainly been, feeling that. We've been paying a lot more, and you see the share buybacks, you see, you know, billionaires gaining more and more money. So talk about that if you could, because I think, you know, obviously big corporations are what a lot of people think about when they think about who should be paying larger shares of their profits towards our shared needs.
Yeah, I mean, so my organization, the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, and anyone who's listening can find our stuff at itep.org, itep.org. We monitor this. And so we found in 2022, I think it was, that 55 profitable, highly profitable corporations paid zero in corporate income taxes that year. And we found that after the first Trump tax law, the 2017 tax law, that there just was a really dramatic decline in the share of their income that corporations were paying in taxes. So well below the corporate rate. I mean, I believe the average share that corporations were paying was in the 12% range. That's on a rate that's 21%. So you just see this ability to really avoid responsibility. And the irony is that it's the infrastructure that we've put in place that, of course, has enabled these corporations to build their wealth in the first place. I mean, it's because we have good roads and good infrastructure to get products out to market. It's because we have a solid banking system that's regulated that people feel safe spending. And, but despite that, we want to balance the budget on, you know, people who qualify for Medicaid, which is, you know, very, very low income families.
So I want to ask you about what the pushback has been. Are Democrats pushing back, or did they push back? Because now this bill has like made it through Congress. Did they push back in any meaningful way, or was there some bipartisan complicity here?
I mean, in fairness to the Democrats, not one Democrat voted for this bill. And I think that there were some really lively exchanges where a number of members of the Senate and the House really tried to draw attention to just how devastating this piece of legislation is going to be to our economy and to low and middle income families. So I believe they spent, they introduced more amendments than has ever been introduced before. And they introduced amendments that really highlight, like, the estate tax cuts, the corporate tax cuts, the income tax cuts, the Medicaid cuts. They tried to introduce amendments that would protect people on Medicaid. So I think that there was pretty good unity in that regard. Now, whether or not Democrats are doing a good job of communicating to voters, I think that's another story entirely. You know, I think a lot of voters don't understand what just happened. This bill is extraordinarily unpopular when people learn the details, but a lot of people, it's just flying under the radar.
No, I think that's very true. And there's been so much obfuscation. I mean, that White House press conference with, you know, workers coming up there, making it seem like that. So a lot of confusion. And it makes me wonder about another issue, too, regarding this is, you know, I think the vast majority of people, we're all worried about, you know, the cost of everything seems to be going up, you know, more or less month to month, but everything's getting more expensive and the tariffs. We don't know exactly how that's going to land, but that feels like that could have a big impact, because even if I do get, you know, a bigger tax refund, it feels like a lot of it could just be, you know, wiped away.
No, 100%. And we did analysis of this for the first time and just found that for 80% of the population of the United States, the tariff, the increase in cost from tariffs is going to either make it so that the tax cuts make you break even, or it's even going to result in a loss. So that's before you even get to the Medicaid cuts and the healthcare cuts. The tariffs alone sort of wipe out most of the tax savings for low and middle income families. I think we're going to see really big price spikes for American families for a lot of things that we've counted on getting. And, you know, there's a role for tariffs when they're accompanied by a sort of smart industrial strategy, but this ain't it.
You know, speaking to that, I want to ask you about the long-term consequences here, because I think with these kinds of things, and I know this is like really unprecedented, like you described it as the biggest wealth transfer in history, it's easy to kind of see it in the moment, be like, oh no, this is horrible, and move on. But what are, you know, the long-term impacts we're going to see from this on inequality, on that sort of racial and intergenerational inequality? And, you know, I guess moving forward, you know, what does that mean for the country?
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you asked that. I recently had a loss in my family, and it got me thinking about how somebody born in 1934, you know, what kind of arc of life they were able to have. And, like, of course, the biggest problem in the United States has always been that we didn't deliver those opportunities in an equitable way. But for many people living in the 20th century, you know, that's when we established the estate tax. It's when we established the income tax. It's when we established the corporate tax. And it's when we established Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and food aid to families. A lot of these were outgrowths of the Great Depression. Well, are we providing those same kinds of opportunities for a kid born today? I really hate to say it, but I just don't think that we are. And so instead of moving in the direction of saying, hey, we provided this opportunity for some, let's make sure we provide it for everyone, I think what Republicans did this week was the exact opposite, which is to say, hey, we're providing this to some, let's just restrict who gets that kind of opportunity even further. So it's a daunting moment for somebody who cares about this country.
No, I think that's for sure. It doesn't feel like a beautiful bill, at least to me, in this context. Amy, you mentioned it at the a little bit earlier, but I just want you to mention it again, where folks can find your work, because you all are doing fantastic stuff, and not just at the federal level, also examining at the state level everything that's happening with taxes.
Yeah, you can find any of the things that I've talked about today at itep.org. That's where you can find that we're giving $1 trillion to the top 1%. That the tariffs exceed the savings for a lot of taxpayers, and that this is just a heavily skewed piece of legislation. Mm.
Amy Hanauer, thank you so much for joining us here on the Freedom Side today.
Wonderful to be here.
Mm-hmm. Rania?
I mean, Eugene, it's just freaking unbelievable, but also believable. And the idea of calling it the Big Beautiful Bill, what a great marketing ploy.
Yeah.
It's everything up is down, you know, forward is backwards. That's the world we live in. Everything's a massive gaslight. And it's just horrifying that this passed. And I just,
Yeah.
I mean, it's like how many more massive wealth transfers do you get to have before we just have gone back 100 years? Like, yeah. Actually in the U.S., you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I really can't recommend ITEP any higher in terms of, you know, the information they're putting out on a daily basis, which is, you know, very, very useful. And I just want to say before we move on that I know about the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy because of the late Dr. David Schwartzman, a very good friend of mine who unfortunately passed on Tuesday afternoon, former Howard University professor, climate scientist, longtime advocate for D.C. statehood, for socialism, for all forms of peace and justice. But many, 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 many years ago now, I feel pretty old saying this, when he and I were first starting to work together, he said, you have to look up the ITEP report on such and such and such and such taxation, such and such. And I was like, who is this and what are they doing? And I've been hooked since then because they're really going deep at the federal and the state level on these issues and explaining the reality of this, which is being totally obscured. I mean, the other aspect of this is the Senate Republicans are using like a weird accounting trick. I don't even know if you can call it accounting trick. It's almost just like sorcery that is saying that this won't add to the deficit, that in fact it will create a surplus because you can't assume. It's hard to even explain. Just look it up if you want to look it up. It's like a crazy accounting trick so that it doesn't look like they're adding trillions of dollars to the deficit when they are, because, you know, of course, this is something Republicans are very concerned about, and they're just creating a fake surplus. It's like a weird just sort of magic wand type reality there, and it really just shows how pernicious so much of this stuff really is, because it is just lies on top of lies on top of lies. And you know, David Dayan, who's been on the show a number of times, I hope folks check out the American Prospect today, because he has an article about how there could be hundreds of billions of dollars in Medicare cuts. Now, we're already talking about the hundreds of billions of dollars in Medicaid cuts, but he was pointing out how some of the language in the bill means that there'll be hundreds of millions of dollars in Medicare cuts. So remember, Trump says, I'm not going to kick anyone off Medicaid. Millions of people are going to get kicked off Medicaid. Not going to cut Medicare. Obviously, they're cutting Medicare. Not going to cut Social Security, yet to be seen, but it certainly seems like that could happen as well. And then the final thing I just want to say about this, Rania, too, is the one big beautiful bill is not even all the cuts. This is just what they could get into the omnibus bill. But they will actually start next week doing even more cutting of other elements of the fiscal year 2026 budget in order to cut things even more deeply. And that's how they got a lot of people to sign onto this, who were complaining about the deficit, saying it didn't cut enough. They had Russ Vaught come over there as director of OMB and say, don't worry, we're going to like really cut stuff to the bone. And even more, the way they've set it up, a lot of the tax cuts will hit before the benefit cut. So it'll create for a lot of people kind of a mirage where they may actually make it seem like they have a little bit more money in their pocket from the tax cuts that doesn't get fully wiped away in terms of everything else until a little bit later. And they're doing that so that you don't vote against the Republicans in the midterms. So the whole thing is just being done in the most ridiculous way possible. But, you know, be that as it may. But did want to say that about Dr. David Schwartzman, who I know a lot of people
seems like now's a really great time to have some sort of socialist movement in America. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I just like don't even know what more provocation you could need than this.
Listen, Eugene Debs was telling us that in, you know, 1912. We should have listened then. And I'm not saying that because we have the same name. But let's move forward to the other. Just it's part of the big beautiful bill. It's part of everything that Trump has been doing, and that is just the all out assault on immigrant communities in this country. And I am very, very happy that we are able to be joined during the show by Jesse Franz Blau, who is the Associate Director of Policy with the National Immigrant Justice Center. Jesse, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Eugene. Thanks so much, Rania. Really appreciate you having me on.
Mm-hmm. Great to have you. I'm going to look at my notes here because I saw something that just blew me away about the one big beautiful bill, and I want to actually get it correct and not just make this up, since people, you know, might accuse me of that. So this is according to Aaron Reichlin Melnick. With this vote, Congress makes ICE the highest funded federal law enforcement agency in history, with more money per year at its disposal over the next 4 years than the budgets of the FBI, DEA, ATF, U.S. Marshals, and Bureau of Prisons combined. I mean, that is massive in terms of what is going on here. I almost don't even know how to characterize this, Jesse, but it really does feel like this is I always hate to say unprecedented, but I guess in my lifetime of being 39 years old, it feels unprecedented in terms of what is being done to immigrant communities.
It's a generational change. It really is. All the analysis that Aaron provides there, Aaron is a good friend and colleague. His analysis is always really spot on, and never sensational. Those numbers are incredibly chilling. It's really important to remember that there's an entire separate process that funds ICE for the fiscal year. So we're talking about fiscal year appropriated numbers for the entire agency of ICE. That's gotten to about $10 billion, which is an enormous amount of money. ICE has only been here, of course, since 2003. It started out obviously quite small. It's just expanded enormously in terms of every year a little bit more funding, $10 billion for appropriated, fiscally appropriated funds. This is at $45 billion just for ICE detention. And then an extra $30 billion for ICE enforcement, an extra $2 billion for CBP enforcement, $59 billion for CBP for the border wall, $13 billion for this state border security reinforcement fund, and $10 billion for this basically slush fund for the Department of Homeland Security, unrestricted funds that they could use for additional border enforcement, no due process, and safeguards as a part of that, and $1 billion for the military, for the DOD. For border militarization that also includes detention of immigrant communities. So we're going to be seeing detention of people in military facilities or in places where the military is in charge. We're already seeing this start. There's an El Paso Southside facility where we understand people are being detained, held using military funds. We're going to be seeing it's a complete game changer. It's a generational change that we're looking at in terms of the nature of this enforcement machine. I've seen even folks comparing the numbers to the global military spending. This puts ICE ahead of other countries' global military spending. Ahead of many countries. I have to pull that up. I think it's a good figure to look at. But in terms of a U.S. interior enforcement body, it's really a game changer in terms of what ICE is going to be provided.
If you're interested in that kind of analysis on economic, domestic, and international affairs, please check out The Freedom Side live on all podcast platforms or on YouTube, where the show is hosted on the Breakthrough News channel. So as we get towards the end of our show here, I'm going to tell you what's next in the neighborhood. We shared this last week, but I wanted to just plug it again. On July 12th, head to downtown Tampa for a demonstration against Turning Point USA. They are hosting their Student Action Summit at the Tampa Convention Center. But, you may be asking yourself, who is Turning Point USA? Well, it's a notorious organization for basically regurgitating any and all of Trump's views against immigrants, women, LGBTQ people, Palestinians, unions, and many more. It's going to be a great event. There's going to be lots of high-profile right-wing speakers there, so I'm sure the media will be out to capture the fantastic fight-back movement that will be there. Look at Tampa Bay SDS on socials for more details. Also, mark your calendars for a Liberation film screening of the film Fresa y Chocolate, coming on Sunday, July 13th at 4 p.m. This, of course, translated to English, is Strawberry and Chocolate. This is an Oscar-nominated 1993 comedy drama and an important film in Cuba's LGBTQ film history. Fresa y Chocolate challenged machismo culture and showed what a true revolutionary looks like. This film brought queer issues to the national conversation in Cuba that contributed to the many reforms that came after 1993 and, of course, culminating in the Family Code of 2022. There is limited space, so please be sure to check out PSL Tampa Bay on social media in order to pre-register. So, Thank you again for listening to The Ruthless Truth here today on WSLR. To learn more about our shows or to share your thoughts with us, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook at The Ruthless Truth Radios and listen to all of our shows on any podcast platform. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great rest of your day.